Hello, hello, hello. Lynn Pingle here, CEO of Mackey Company and your host for the Thursday noon hour. We are live and broadcasting the Procurement Games podcast and open conversations on WFNU 94.1 Frogtown Community Radio. So our show is about providing a platform for small businesses to showcase their expertise, share their stories, lessons learned, while discussing the challenges they face in procurement and as a small business alone. Folks, we always talk about not being able to get to those influencers of change. And I'm here to tell you that while change is slow, we do have champions in place. And a guest we have today, I have to tell you, I have butted heads with, argued, solved problems, collaborated, and have become a go-to on understanding the protocols and games played in the procurement and contracting realm of government. So I can't wait to dive in today. And before I get to going there, I have to do a shout out to all the Minnesota listeners and those across the great United States who have tuned in every Thursday at noon and every Tuesday at 10 a.m. for a new talk show to learn about the ecosystem of small businesses, disparities in opportunity and wealth building, and how we can create our own playing field with solutions that make sense for us. So let me introduce my fellow co-host and show technician, Jared Peterson. Jared, what's up?
Well, good afternoon, Lynn. It's good to see you, hear you. I'm Jared Peterson. I am the executive director over at Our Tech Cooperative. We're a technology cooperative that works with small and disadvantaged businesses to pair them with large businesses and make great outcomes for our customers. Today, we are here on a Thursday where we have our regular conversations, but we've also added that Tuesday block on WFNU 94.1 called The Talk, where listeners can call in, chat with Lynn and myself, and our featured guest for the week. And so if you are able to, on Tuesday, the phone number 651-313-5125. I got the number right this time.
Yes,
651-313-5125. Those Tuesday conversations, we try and take your questions live on the air at the talk at 10 a.m. every Tuesday. If not, if you can't make that in live, you can also send your questions, burning comments, and concerns to insights at procurementgames.us. Lynn, I'm really excited about our show today. We're in that trailblazer section of our Thursday interviews, where we get to interview somebody who is paving the way for small and disadvantaged businesses to succeed and in the realm of procurement. Today we have a special trailblazer who's in that that vein where they're dealing with diversity, equity, and inclusion in the government level, so to speak. And so this is our second trailblazer. Trailblazers and individuals who are paving the way help them to understand that we're looking for solutions and we're looking to help trailblazers give their platform for them to go ahead and show how they're making things happen inside of their own organizations. And introducing Ashanti Payne, he's the Assistant Director of Equal Equity and Equal Opportunity. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Equity and Equal Opportunity at the Metropolitan Council. Ashanti, how are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be on. Thanks for inviting me. And definitely looking forward to this conversation.
Well, I have to do some disclaimers about my relationship with Ashanti, because Ashanti was very instrumental in bringing me to lovely Minnesota in this wintry mixed storm warning we have until 6 p.m. Thank you, Ashanti. And the reason for that was to develop MnDOT Small Business Resource Center, and that just seems like it was back in the day. You know, that was
it like does seem like it was a long time ago. There's a COVID sink in there where things slowed down and things sped up at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know.
It feels like forever.
Yeah, it was like pre and then post happened, and then he abandoned me, you know, to go to Met Council. So, you know, we're going to have to address my issues about that, Ashanti. But nevertheless, I am excited to have you here on the show. And really, to kick things off, again, we have a protocol. You know, Jared loves my script because sometimes he doesn't even know where he's at on the script. It's kind of funny when we're talking about
it. You see, I got lost in there. And that intro, I was like, I started and then I got lost. And yeah, I got a little bit lost in that. Yeah.
You know, I put it in a sequence so that it made it easy for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, you chose to do your own jam right
there. Hey, you know, go to buy a different drummer.
You got buttons to push.
I do.
I think that's what that
is. I missed the record button at the beginning, too. So we missed the intro recording that one. So we'll fix it in post.
All right. We'll fix it in post. As long as the other our listeners hear it. All right. Ashanti, talk to us. Who are you? What are you about? How did Ashanti Payne became Ashanti Payne? And is there a chapter two?
A chapter two.
Yeah, you know, there's a Ashanti chapter two.
That's my nickname for him. He doesn't know that that's his nickname.
Oh, doggone it. Did I just let that cat out?
Yeah, that's I'm like so a chapter, sorry. You know.
Well, you know what? This is his chapter two. So all right. I want to know about you. How did you come about? How did you get into this type of work? I personally know a little bit of your history, but I'd love for our listeners to get a little bit of background on you. And, you know, feel free to go back to your childhood, your inspiration, back in the day when you're out there doing your jam. And what are you passionate about, the work that you do now?
Yeah, well, back to my childhood, I've always been attracted to helping and serving others. And that probably comes from my grandmother, who was really active in the community, what I would call a legend in the city of Minneapolis and on the north side, helping others and developing programs and initiatives for youth in an advocacy role, sometimes an agitator role, a revolutionary role. So that's really watching her influence her community and have an impact really had an impression on me. So that followed me through high school, through college in California. People always ask me, why did I come back to Minnesota? But I do love...
It's the weather.
Yeah.
The lovely Minnesota weather. That's my dad joke I use all the time, Minnesota.
But it's near and dear to my heart. And I started working for the Department of Transportation. And I think the office was called EEO Contract Management back then. And that was back in 92. So I did 27 years of public service at MnDOT and left this time in 2019 to go to the Metropolitan Council, which was also a strange transition because 3 months after starting there, we were all sent home and quarantined for a while. So
you didn't get to enjoy your cubicle.
No, not my office at all. Like I said, my actual office is in Minneapolis, but I've spent most of my time in headquarters in St. Paul. So I'm just now starting to get used to my office in Minneapolis and starting to unpack a few things and make it my own.
Yeah, that drive. You're dealing with that drive now since you've been home-based a lot of the agencies went home-based anyway with COVID, right?
Yeah, but you know, the council, we're a little bit different in terms of, one, we have a council meetings, and the council meetings have gone back to in person. So we're in a hybrid state. And of course, I would be remiss to all of the diverse and important services that we deliver for the region. There are some that are what we call either frontline workers or working at our plants, our bus and train operators, who are in every day and serving this region. So,
well, you kind of dived into what Met Council does, and so I kind of want to backtrack a little bit and let's talk about what is Met Council. I know in our briefings before we talked about Met Council being an organization that kind of came about because of X. So give us a high level of how Met Council came about, and then I know you mentioned some of the workers, the frontline workers, and the different divisions that Met Council has. So again, we don't need to do a deep dive because my focus is really the department that you're working in. But tell us a little bit about the organization focus of Met Council and what is Met Council?
Yeah, the Metropolitan Council is really a unique organization, not only in this state, but around the country. There are not very many, maybe one or two, that are either similarly situated. So we provide really essential services throughout the region. So we're five divisions. Of course, the largest division, the one that's most visible to the public, of course, is Metro Transit, because you see the buses and trains out there, and it's the largest division, both by employees. And then we have Environmental Services, which sometimes I refer to as kind of the sleeping giant, because a lot of people are not aware of all of the things that they do and provide and the opportunities that result, you know, from wastewater treatment, environment. So definitely our second largest division. We also have community development, and I'm going to mention community development along with Metropolitan Transportation Services, because they have a close relationship, because the Metropolitan Council also is the planning agency for the region, is the MPO. And those two divisions kind of partner on that activity. Also, community development, our regional parks, green space, and then Metropolitan Transportation Services. One of their flagship programs would be Metro Mobility and some of our other transportation services that don't exist through Metropolitan Transit. And then regional administration, which is my division, we support those divisions. So you have departments like procurement, human resources, audit, legal. Yeah, we
provide.
Compliance is definitely one of those functions for sure. and definitely an important function. But also, you know, we're there to support and provide that resource technical assistance and make sure that we can all function and keep everybody moving in the same direction.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, there's a couple of departments that I didn't realize, like that environmental one. Different states, again, transit authority, transit. But they don't really look at, you know, what is community development under Met Council's definition versus community development that usually goes under, like, the housing projects, because that's usually where it's.
Well, and you guys also have a housing redevelopment authority department, too, don't you?
Well, housing is part of community development as well. So Hennepin County and maybe a couple others in the region have their own housing. But other than that, yes, we
have that piece too.
We have that piece as well.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And so. When we're familiarizing some vendor partners who come and we're bringing them to Met Council, it's like we're talking about how, you know, the most visible is going to be the Metro Transit, all the light rail, the buses, all that stuff. But the iceberg below the surface is actually wastewater, because they have a huge, like, I have a buddy who crawls around in the sewers down there, and you get some really interesting stories. But, like, nobody realizes how much stuff Met Council actually is able to do.
Yeah. Well, you don't really think about, like, public works under the transit again, which it does make sense when you think about railroads and subway systems and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't want to dive too deep on some of this stuff, because obviously Jared and I could derail really, really easy. What I'm really most interested in is your particular department and the areas in which your department kind of covers. And again, folks, we're just doing a baseline so you guys understand what Met Council is and why Ashanti is in the hot seat today. Hot seat? That's not a good thing.
This is an elevation platform.
Elevation platform.
Yeah, he's a trailblazer creating pathways within the organization, a large organization. How many? We failed to mention how large the Met Council is. How many? Well, how far out do you reach in your influence?
So the 7-county metro region is kind of our influence. And
so nothing greater Minnesota-ish?
No.
No, okay.
No. But also in approximately 4,000 employees.
Okay.
So, yes, very large, very diverse, and certainly provide important services and deliver important services throughout the region.
Yeah. So I'll disclaim now that obviously with the multiple departments, 7 divisions, you said, yeah?
Five divisions.
7-county metro.
7-county metro. 5 divisions. We're only going to talk about the one where Ashanti lives in. that's the regional administration side. So tell me a little bit about your department. What does it do? What are its core function? And who in that ecosystem, in your world, would you work with? And how does that interact?
Yeah. So what we do in the Office of Equity and Equal Opportunity, we touch every part of the organization. So that is not any different than, you know, my role when I was with MnDOT. But in terms of the Office of Equity and Equal Opportunity, that was one thing that kind of opened my eyes to the Metropolitan Council, is the multiple things that even our department does, provides, and supports throughout all divisions. So I oversee most of the operations components, so small business programs, the light rail transit, small business, sub-recipient oversight. So, of course, we get federal funds, and we might disseminate those funds either to cities, counties, contractors. There are strings and requirements that come with those funds, and we have to make sure that federal requirements are adhered to. And then also,
You forgot bureaucracy.
Well, you know, that comes without saying. Yeah, that comes without saying. And then also our affirmative action and equal opportunity programs as well. So then we also have what we call our equity and implementation unit, and we have a senior enterprise equity manager that leads that unit. And then we also have what we call our investigations resolution unit, so which handles internal investigations relative to protected class. And I forgot to mention that within that equity unit also American with Disabilities Act and Title VI of the Civil Rights Act is also covered under that. Under that portion. So, like I said, we touch all parts of the organization, but some of our key partners, of course, are our procurement, HR, audit.
Are you the only assistant director at EEO, or are there parallel positions? And then how you have the board, the council members. So give me your pathway up. How connected are you? Is really the question I'm talking about.
All right. So I'll start at the top.
Okay.
So as you mentioned, we have a council, or some people refer to it as a board, but and which is appointed by the governor.
Okay.
And the chair, Chair Zelli, is appointed by the governor. And there's 16 council members, 17 including the chair, and that they represent districts within this 7-county metro area. Then the regional administrator, Mary Bogie, is what would be the right equivalent, CEO or?
Executive officer, the executive function of the...
Over the whole council. So all the divisions, all of the general managers, directors report to Mary, including my boss, reports directly to the regional administrator. And then there's me. I am currently the only assistant director, but we are in the process of hiring another assistant director within the Office of Equity and Equal Opportunity.
Who reports to you?
I have two managers that report to me. I hope I get this right. So the small business.
Don't forget anybody.
I know. The small business unit manager reports to me. Light rail transit small business reports to me. And mention this engagement and development unit manager, which is a new unit within the Office of Equity and Equal Opportunity, reports to me. And then there's some cross-functional relationships, like I said, from the sub-recipient oversight functions. We have some cross-functional activities.
Cool. All right, folks. I think you guys have the hierarchy and the organizational viewpoint of Met Council and the department that Ashanti runs, I suppose is the right word. So let's get dirty. Jared,
yeah, let's talk about how small businesses get in, right?
Yes.
You guys have coined a cute little term for... How you organize small and disadvantaged businesses inside of the organization? What's the name of the certification?
The Metropolitan Council Underutilized Business Program. We call it MCUB.
There you go. That's what. Yeah, yes. The MCUB. So it's kind of funny. I call it a cute one because it's a cub. You know,
it's cubby.
Like, yeah, a little cub. It's kind of neat. But yeah, what's its purpose? What are MCUBs? What do they do? You know, why do you consider them important to industry and within your organization? How do you guys encourage them to be a part of it, and where do they fit? Or are you paving a way for them to be successful within your procurement system?
Thank you for that question.
It was long, as many
yes,
as many
I'm
in
out.
There.
Yeah, there was
it just
a
opened.
Series and comments.
There's one more after that, so we'll just wait for that one after you're done talking about
I'm
all that
I'm going to try
stuff.
And hit on all of those points.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I want folks to know, and it's important, that it's not a separate certification. So if you are a disadvantaged business enterprise, which is the federal small business program, and your primary place of business is in the state of Minnesota, if you are certified with the Department of Administration as a targeted group business, veteran-owned, or you are certified with the City of St. Paul's CERT program, you are automatically enrolled into our MCUB program.
So that no application,
additional application.
You're just naturally downloaded from all of those directories and into MCUB.
Correct.
Got it. Very cool.
And it is really and it's really
barrier reduced, by the way.
Yes. Directories are my favorite topic.
Yes.
I'll play that episode for you later, Ashanti. You'll get that one.
Oh, I hear it. You know that I hear it. It's also really important because it's applicable to our locally funded capital programs and projects. So we establish subcontracting goals for MCUBs on our projects and programs.
We talk about goals, just so you know.
Yes. And we have a lot more flexibility to be intentional in how we engage and connect with small businesses. As we mentioned before, the federal programs and those federal projects have a lot more stringent rules in terms of what you can do. So that's why we really have a strong focus and want to promote our MCUB program, because we have a lot more flexibility and we've developed a lot more initiatives around our MCUB program to be more intentional and more direct. Just as an example, by statute, we can contract up to $10,000 without a competitive process. But if you are an MCUB with the council, we've raised that to $25,000. So, of course, project managers and folks really like that because you don't have to go. You could get done stuff.
Faster. No HR, no department division checkpoints.
And then up to $175,000, we have what's called MCUB Select. So if there are at least three MCUBs that are likely to bid on that opportunity, we can shelter the market and only allow MCUBs to compete against each other for that opportunity.
Before you continue, let's give our listeners a definition of what a sheltered market is.
Only those who are MCUB businesses are able to compete for that opportunity and be awarded that opportunity. So you're not competing against this large pool company where, their overhead is not as high as yours. They have other staff that they, so you're competing against like businesses. And for the opportunity.
So you're sort of in a protected group or a selected group that is given unique opportunities and like you said, competing against your real competitors versus, me trying to compete with Google.
Right.
Yeah. I aspire to be Google, but it's going to be a tough
one day.
Yeah. One day is good. But what I love about that is the fact that there is a, I don't know what the right word would be, but the privilege of being on an MCUB list from 10,000 to 25 grand is pretty cool. I didn't know that. And, I've been in this thing and I didn't even know that. And that 175, wow, that's really, really even cooler. Is that since you came over?
Yeah, some of those changes have happened since I've come over. And I mentioned before, one of our key partners is procurement. So they definitely deserve a lot of credit. And we've really seen a lot of success through what we call those micro purchases and those purchases 25 and under.
Yeah.
Again, because the convenience and the availability and the opportunity to be intentional in our efforts.
And I got a couple of questions that's going to do the dive on those small business purchases. I'm going to give Jared the last question so he has that platform, and we're at the half more point and we're
pretty
about
soon
to
I got
to
read that disclaimer at the bottom of the hour. Before that, do you have a mentoring program, and do you have any success stories, one or two that came out of your, anything like that, if there is one?
Oh yeah. Through the, our engagement and development unit, and with collaboration and partnership with what we call our Minnesota Unified Certification Program partners.
MINUCP.
Yes. MnDOT.
It's not as cute as MCUB.
It's not.
MinCup. No.
Yeah.
You guys did a better job on that one. Whoever is on the marketing side of that did pretty
branding,
good job.
Branding. All right, go ahead.
But we operate what we call a mentor protege, where we partner certified small businesses with larger, longer established businesses to work on various things. It could be getting safety, whatever it is. And they agree to work on these things and partner. And one success story, we had a firm that's owned by a black male and does site prep. And as of 2019, had never done any work with the council, $0.
Wow.
But today I could say they've done up to $2 million in work for the council.
Oh, that's
through
awesome.
A large part of that and goes to the credit with their mentor-protege relationship that they had. So that's another program that we like to promote. We awesome. Also like to solicit for mentors to participate. Of course, with programs like that, oftentimes you have more folks wanting to be mentees than you have mentors.
That's right.
But
so this is a shout out. We need mentors the mentor protege program.
Yes.
Yeah. This is that shout out. Real quick, I know we mentioned MINUCP, but what is MINUCP and who are the agencies participating in that, so that our listeners can kind of understand this is not just a Met Council, that this is that a joint effort of agencies, really, is what it is.
Yes. So, and Jared will appreciate this, you know, because we're going to talk about directories a little bit. but way back in the day, and I go back far enough to remember when Minnesota Department of Transportation, where I was, Metropolitan Council, Metropolitan Airports Commission, it was just those three at the time, all had separate DBE, federal program certifications. Nice. And you had to be certified with each one of those agencies individually.
Wow.
And so finally, of course, hearing this and all across the country, the Fed said, by this date, you will have a unified certification program and one certification, at least for the federal side. And now we've added the city of Minneapolis to that MNUCP. I forget the year when they came on board, but they've been around, been part of it for a long time.
Well, WFNU is a volunteer-run station made up of many community voices. Each program expresses one aspect of this diversity and is not the view of WFNU or FTI as a whole.
That always catches me off guard. That always does, because it just like cuts you off in the middle of all of that stuff.
I let you go a little bit longer. Yeah. I did it still within the 30. I think I did it still within the bottom of the hour.
But, I was going to say, how
rude. Do you
want
to finish your thought? Yeah, finish your thought.
But no, it's those four agencies, and those agencies are the ones that are making decisions about certification, who meets the eligibility requirements for the Federal Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program. And they meet, there's representatives from each agency that meet biweekly to make those decisions. And there's also what we call a MNUCP meeting, currently being chaired by the Metropolitan Airports Commission, that we also talk about the program components of the disadvantaged business and of the MNUCP, how we are going to operate, how do we engage and collaborate with each other. So, yes, it's an important agency in this realm of certification of small businesses.
Yeah, most definitely. And with the infrastructure dollars coming down the pipeline, we know that there's more money going into the DBE program for increased engagement and education and training and all that stuff. So hopefully those dollars will get to us and we'll be able to utilize that. So let me shift gears, since I know we've given this big overview and we've already set our disclaimers. Now, most of our listeners are probably wondering what questions I'm going to grill you today. So we're going to go ahead and talk about challenges and industry and for small businesses. Notice that I said hot seat and then grill. So obviously my mindset wasn't in the realm that Jared was earlier.
Elevation.
Elevation.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. I did use
elevating the pathway to success.
Yeah. So I feel like, you know, if you want to just chill, shake your shoulders, because we're going to get dirty here. Let's focus on construction. I know there's tons of opportunities where the spend dollars are and everything, and we can't possibly cover everybody's specialty. I know in the house we have someone in technology and someone in construction, and most of our listeners are also within that realm. So I want to focus on the construction, the technology, and those micro purchases that Met Council makes, and then kind of get your perspective and lenses. And so one of the things I want to make sure is, with regards to just those three elements, what has Met Council faced in challenges with working for small businesses, right? Because I want to be able to give you the platform to say, hey, you know what? Small businesses are not doing ABC. And then we'll come back to, because again, this is through your lenses. And I do have a disclaimer here that these are the lenses of Ashanti Payne and not necessarily that of Met Council. And I want to put you on the spot and ask you these questions simply because, you know, we want to understand where you're coming from. Again, understanding your background with grandma influence you as an agitator. That's it. Ashanti Payne, Chapter 2, Agitator. That's the name of the album. Okay. Right. you know, so what challenges do you see with working with small businesses? Disparity studies have shown what's lacking in the ecosystem, right? Okay. But in your experience, 27 at Met Council, I mean, at MnDOT, four years now, at Met, what have you seen?
Well, there's always challenges, and I'll start with construction. So, you know, we have one of the largest construction projects in the history of the state of Minnesota. And
Southwest Light Rail.
Yes, we've been consistently exceeding the DBE goal on the project, which is great and something that should be celebrated. But the challenge is when you have those large projects in a large organization, those large and complex projects bring challenges to our small businesses who are often down the tier in terms of the relationship with the council. So pay cycle.
Yep.
Is a challenge. You're down the line in the pay cycle and you're a small business.
You're floating the
big
guy.
You're floating. So, and it's, yeah. And that burden is on you. So that's a challenge for us. How do we mitigate that? How do we resolve that? And what are those best practices to do that? And other, you know, when you have a pandemic that hits and you during one of those large projects and you have these supply chain issues, again, those are going to impact small businesses in a disproportionate way. So, you know, even years ago at MnDOT, when I, you know, would talk to the engineers and I'd sit down and I'd say, you know, it seems like we're keep getting bigger and bigger in terms of the projects and we're doing design build. What's the benefit for us to do that? Because, you know, I'm trying to look for solutions for our small businesses. And they always told me, Ashanti, it's about risk. It's about balancing the risk from us as the owner and not assuming all of that risk. And it, you know, a light went on and I said, you know what? We have that same opportunity to do that with our small business programs, our compliance, because in most cases, as the owner, we're taking on all of the risk for failure. If we fail, we're not adequately sharing that risk. And I think there's opportunity for us to better balance that the risk of those programs, just like we do with design and construction. Sure. So that would be one of those challenges that you say, hey, how can we work together resolve this? The other thing, like you said, there's lots of disparity studies and other studies around. And, you know, I was reading one from Southern Maryland, and they are talking about, you know, as needed services and master contracts and how that's a barrier for small businesses.
Absolutely.
We know that from our own empirical experience as well. But the only recommendations I see there is that they say do less of it.
Yeah.
There's not really
a pathway. It's like all these unpacking of DEI work and analysis. It's just like, you know, here's what everybody, nobody really spells out. If you do this, you get this. If you do this, you get this. If you do this, you get this. And then the game plan with all the disses.
Yeah.
That's the hard part.
Yeah, so we found, you know, something that the San Diego area of government was doing. They call it their bench program. And
right.
That seems like a better option just to say, because those procurement methods are a benefit to the business units. There's a reason why they want to use that method and why they're doing it. So just to say, let's not do it or do less of it. You got to be responsive to the business need as well as, and that seems like a program that is working that we are trying to model, and we kind of semi-piloted in a fashion on a technology project that I'm sure that we'll have an opportunity to talk about.
Yes, most definitely.
Well, that's one of the things we identified too with our tech co-op was IDIQs tend to. We don't see those opportunities coming through.
IDIQs are?
Indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity.
There you go.
Master contracts, short list. What other terms can we think of for these type of contracts?
These are contracting mechanisms that government agencies
use. Yes, contracting mechanisms. It's a contract vehicle. And we wouldn't see those opportunities come through for our type of industry, and we wouldn't be able to compete on them. And so one of the things we tried to identify is what vendors have those IDIQs in place and then try and get ahead of the procurement cycle and say, hey, what contract do you need this on? Let's do it with a socioeconomic component where that meets there. But that takes a ton of work. Either that or we got to compete directly for it. And most of the time, the provider is not willing to unseat themselves from the cushion,
yeah.
Or provide a way there. So you need to be ahead of that procurement cycle, and you don't know about it if it's not coming through an IDIQ. So,
absolutely. You got a couple of questions I need you to ask Ashanti here before I.
Yeah,
dive
and
into
I didn't mean to hijack. You know, change the the direction of the track. But those are definite challenges that we can see in the industry. But let's go macro view. through your lenses, what is lacking or not working in the equity realm for small businesses?
Well, I'm going to speak to, you know, something that we did a couple summers ago where, you know, I said, okay, when's the last time we heard from our small businesses and connected to find out what their challenges are and hear from them what their barriers are? And so we put together a survey, not only for small businesses, but again, for those larger, longer established businesses as well. And so we heard from about 350 small businesses, I think 40 some larger, longer established businesses. Mm-hmm. And the number one barrier that was identified from small businesses was how to access opportunities at the council. And of course, when I said that, you know, you speak to those sophisticated small businesses, they're like, well, you know, that
we know where to find.
Yeah, we know where to find. And it's like, okay, understood that you're not included in that. But that was the number one barrier that was identified. So I was like, okay. And, you know, when you come as an agency, we're thinking we're doing a good job. Okay, we post these opportunities here. And okay, whatever we're doing, it wasn't hitting the mark.
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay. So that was kind of what can we do immediately to address that. So we reinvigorated some programs, some outreach efforts. We also put together a video that you find on YouTube and connect to from our website, how to do business with the council, and really find opportunities. And then we did a couple of group sort of meet and greets with business units. And now we're continuing to do individual meet and greets. So when my team comes into contact with a business and they're saying, hey, you know, we've never had any
opportunities with Met Council
or any headway in breaking through on the council. So we identify, okay, we find out what that business does, what service they provide. Chances are, like I said, with a large, diverse organization like ours, There's some fit somewhere.
Sure.
And then we connect them directly with those decision makers, one, so that they can learn about each other, become familiar with each other. And then also part of that is, what are some of the upcoming opportunities, and then how do I access them?
So what I'm hearing here is that there's you guys are doing your internal research and your internal matching of opportunities, and that's kind of a different shift from what Met Council used to do before, relying on a beautiful directory, we call it.
Yeah, I mean,
so we're getting really engaged and really connecting, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it really, it's getting good feedback from our business units.
Absolutely.
They're like, hey, we didn't even know this business was out there. I mean, you know, and then even some of the large, like I said, larger, long established, they're saying, hey, can we do another one of these? Can we do it for this site? I mean, I sat in one session where a business owner was a former employee of one of these larger consulting firms. And they're like, we wondered what happened to you. And now I see all the contracts that come through. So it was good to see that business actually get awarded some work.
Yeah. So I'm going to cut Jared's question off here because I really want to get to it.
Well, I think he answered all those questions I had. What opportunities or you got all those things in there.
He did. And then again, the division. And again, the episode's going to be available on procurementgames.org so we can revisit. I want to pivot and talk about goals. And again, disclaimer, these are Ashanti's lenses and the human side, right? Not necessarily those of Met Council. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask, are goals on projects good or are they mere box checkers?
Well, I can sit here and say that they are definitely not mere box checkers. But I'll also say that a goal is not always the right solution or fit for a particular procurement opportunity. So the message, my boss always tells me to keep saying it, because I say maybe they're getting tired of hearing me say this, but my boss says, nope, keep saying it. Engage with us early. The earlier the better, because then we can discuss different opportunities, different ways to include small businesses, to incorporate equity into the process. And that is not always a goal. Sometimes it's small business inclusion language, because you got to leave space, provide space and opportunity for innovation, for
That's
people
right.
to innovate, for people to tell us what's the best approach to this. And sometimes it might be something like we did with the IS staff augmentation, where we didn't set a goal, but we're committed as a floor to 25% participation from MCUB. So goals are important. I don't want to say that they're not, but they're not always the right fit for every single opportunity.
Sure. And I love that perspective because, again, contracting in the procurement realm or in government is so tied to the goal. And one of the things that you said earlier is that intentionality that Met Council is doing to engage and the effort that you're doing to get to know businesses. So I love that component. You know, market research that is conducted, right? So we know who's in the pool. We know who's out there in our multiple directories. And it sounds like you're doing a deeper dive to understand, okay, now that I've got the list, what are they really capable of? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not only that, but again, we want to look for ways that we can be better. And, you know, we're not saying we're perfect or, you know, hey, look at us. We want to make sure that we're getting better. And another thing that we're doing, so thanks for that question, is to give me an opportunity to plug something that we got coming. We're doing and going to be putting out an RFP soon to conduct an equity assessment or audit of our procurement small business programs. What are our policies? What are the barriers? What are some best practices? What can we do? You know, evaluating what we've done, in the past, so that we can get better, make some strides, and make some improvements. So, and then the other thing, we're at our as you know, Lynn, our DBE goal, our annual overall DBE goal is set on a triennial basis. Currently, federal fiscal year 21 through 23, and we'll be, for the first time for the council, contracting with a third party to propose our DBE and Environmental Protection Agency, EPA goal.
That's cool.
I bet you didn't know that there was a federal DBE program for the environmental services component. Part of that is the market research and market analysis, understanding what the opportunities will be in the future. So those are two things that are coming up soon that we will be doing.
Well, so now I'm going to hand this off to Jared because we're going to talk about technology. And I know we touched a little bit about the small purchases or the, what did you call them?
Micro purchases.
And the opportunities that lay there. So, Jared, this is your conversation. Let's talk about this.
We had a fun with the technology situations in the past. And we've talked about protests in the past, too, as well, and about how difficult they can be in order to submit a protest or be worried about blacklisting or the worry about something's fishy about this. I don't think it's right. Let me question the process. And so we've worked on a couple situations where we've put them through the council, and it was discovered that there was probably some work to be done. And that's kind of what that protest opportunity is for. There's a reason that that exists inside the organization. So what did you guys end up finding or doing in order to come to a point where you mentioned that there's a 25% floor? The council is committed to making a 25% floor in technology, because what we find in general there right now, there isn't a whole lot of goals or floors or anything like that for socioeconomic contracting in technology. But we also find that in the Minneapolis St. Paul Journal, that's some of the most diverse area inside of the Twin Cities, is that that's one of the most diverse industries. So what did you guys end up doing in order to come to a 25% goal? How painful was it to go through all the departments and get them on board with something like, or to understand this new process?
Well, again, I want to stress that an important piece of the process is listening and hearing from small businesses, whether it be in the technology world or other spheres, and one, not being defensive and actually really sitting down and saying, okay, what can we do? What's the issue? And what can we change? And what can we improve on? So one of the things I want to say is that it helps when you have leaders in place that want to be impactful and want to do better. Because, again, it can be easy to be defensive or when someone lobs criticism at you to not be responsive. So that takes leadership and commitment. And in any event, I'm happy to say that we have a good relationship. When I say we, the Office of Equity and Equal Opportunity has a good relationship with our IS folks. They work with us. They engage with us. And one of the things we did, of course, is with the staff augmentation RFP that's out right now and committed to that 25% floor. We didn't set a goal. We got the commitment from the IS department. We had a information session when we invited small businesses to come talk to us, hear about the opportunity, understand it so that they were prepared to compete for it when it came out. So it wasn't a surprise. They knew what the components would be. They had an opportunity to ask questions. And, you know, it seemed like a good thing at the time. But, you know, when my staff came back and said that there was over 100 small businesses that attended the pre-proposal meeting, then I thought, okay, we're onto something. Maybe because, you know, and maybe you mentioned this before, sometimes certified small businesses can become frustrated with the government industry and say, you know what, I'm not going to spend my time.
That's right.
And so that was the thing that was really telling to me is that, okay, they're interested, they're engaged. So let's not lose this momentum, and let's build on this and try to rebuild some trust that we may have lost. And it's a starting point. The other thing is we looked at some of the requirements that are on some of our projects and say, does this fit? Does this make sense? Or is this an artificial barrier? I think one of those, I was just talking to the director of IS, and he was like, yes, we did make a change, in terms of one of those, I think it was like a Cisco, you had to be a Cisco Gold, to compete, and they removed that requirement. So again, it's hearing from folks, it's understanding, really talking about understanding what the issue is, what are the barriers, and is there a solution? Is there something we can do to improve ourselves and improve opportunities for our small businesses.
And we also use that opportunity at our tech co-op to go ahead and say, hey, larger businesses, start working on becoming mentors or thinking about becoming mentors or partnering with small and disadvantaged businesses because they're very serious about this, right?
Right.
And that changed their trajectory as well and their thought process about how they were going to attack competing for it.
Ashanti, the hour has gone by. Yeah. Yeah, and here we are wrapping up already, or having to wrap up already, because there's so many more things that we didn't even get to. But I got to thank you for joining us on today's show, because I know a lot of government agencies hesitate to come live on a show like ours, but in my opinion, it's really a great way to show some of the behind-the-scenes work that's happening, and to be able to tell your story kind of like out of the horse's mouth type of situation, rather than, and you said this earlier, having someone else tell your story. You know, it's going behind the scenes. I have expressed my appreciation for the work that you do. One of the things that he said earlier was that relationship. And again, I've butted heads with Ashanti. I've had arguments with him. But I've also given solutions. Don't just be the one that's just complaining, because sometimes the magnitude of solutions is right there in front of you. And, you know, as a small business, you can stand there and just be part of the problem or be part of the solution and give a clear way for something for people to chew on, right? And again, appreciating the work that you and all the other agencies have done, I still need more, right? I mean, you said it through your lenses. We still need to do more, and there's so much more that we can agitate, right? You know, I'm always available to give my two cents. That's not changed, I don't think. So here I am. Jared, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, it's great to see the change that's going on, because that was the first time we've ever seen anything like that. It was kind of, the industry was quite a little bit confused, and to be able to say, here you go, this is what this actually means, and walk them through that and be a subject matter expert in their government for contracting portion of that, getting other small businesses ready to be able to compete directly, compete in a sub capacity, has been interesting to get ready for this particular contract on the information services side, and we're looking forward to seeing what that means in the future and how that changes the landscape within the council. So it's been neat to see. So thank you for all your hard work there. On Tuesday, we have our talk session. The phone number there would be 651-313-5125 on Tuesdays, and we'll try and answer your questions on the air. Or you can send them to insights@procurementgames.us, Tuesday, 10 a.m., 94.1 WFNU.
Thanks, Jared. So I started the show saying that change is slow. We know that the system is broken. Ashanti and his team at Met Council are constantly working on equity and equal opportunity, very, very clearly articulated today in terms of some of the new programs that's emerged and all the work that's happening. You may not see them at the forefront, but they are back there grinding. We do have champions in the midst, so find them, work with them, build a relationship, and give them time to influence change. I encourage you to build that relationship with the business unit at Met Council, particularly in Ashanti's team, and learn more about the MCUB program because there's phenomenal opportunities there. Folks, let me close with this. We always talk about the low-hanging fruit, but we have to realize that if we look up at the whole tree, it is filled with fruit getting ready to ripen. Learn more about ourselves, learn about others, get involved, don't give up, and collaborate. I know we can do bad and good by ourselves, but we can do more together than we can do by ourselves. Until next time, Jared and Lynn out.